You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to this Locked On Cavs, Locked On Suns crossover. I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs. Joining me, Evan Tadari and Brennan Kleene from Locked On Suns. What's up, guys?
Nothing much, man. How about you?
You know, it's
excited for draft time for sure.
Yeah, I'm feeling like this is going to be a chaotic draft. I don't know where you guys are at on all this, but I just can't imagine that with all the stuff that's being thrown out there, with how weird free agency seems to be shaping up to be, or at least active, I feel like draft night's going to be abnormally busy and chaotic, and there's going to be like a bunch of stuff we find out about like the next morning in various columns about stuff that almost happened but didn't happen. I'm sensing just a weird draft night. It's already kind of picking up now, but I think it's just going to keep building and building and building to something really interesting.
No,
it definitely feels, it definitely feels like there's like the combination of how many teams have kind of a lot riding on this draft with how few teams actually like anyone in it. Like that dichotomy is going to be weird. And I think it's going to make for a lot of movement and a lot of craziness. And I think you're right. It'll be fun. Like, the morning after to be like, oh, they actually almost took him sixth and then he went 25th. Like, wow.
I'm sure we'll get into it, but it just seems like from picks right now, Zion Williamson's going to be a Pelican, John Morant's going to be a Grizzly, but everything else from three all the way to, seems like through the end of the lottery, it's up in the air. And especially picks 3, 4, 5, and 6, it seems like, especially after today's trade, that the Cavs could be a team that actually moves back in this draft.
Yeah, let's get into this trade. So if people haven't heard yet, or if people haven't fully read into it yet, the Hawks made a trade with the Brooklyn Nets. And then for the broader context of the NBA, the signaling here is that the Nets are confident with their cap space. Like, that is just something that they seem very confident in, that they're going to get Kyrie or KD or something like that. What the deal does is, it for the draft purposes, is that the Nets have sent their 17th overall pick in this draft to the Atlanta Hawks. That gives Atlanta 5 picks, I think, in the top 24, and that includes 3 in the top 20. That's number 8, number 10, and number 17. Woj reported that Atlanta could be looking to move up, signaled the Cavs is at the number 5 spot, which is one ahead of the Suns at 6, as a place they could go. And for me, guys, I don't know what you think about sort of where we're at in all of this and what you think of this draft. I'm looking forward to getting into that. But for me, if I'm the Cavs, if I can move back, like, I love Jarrett Culver. I love the idea of Jarrett Culver. I love the idea of DeAndre Hunter. I don't know if I love either of them enough to say, like, I want to stay at 5 and take them no matter what, even though one of them is very, very likely to be there. If I could go back to 8 and maybe get 8 and 10, or I'd even probably be happy with 8 and 17 to some degree. If I'm the Cavs, I'm really trying to look into that, because this is a team that needs talent. This is a team that certainly needs to rebuild the roster with young talent. And I think, considering how much money they have on the books for next year, I think some affordable talent also makes sense. I think the losers in this could be Phoenix. It's just like, if they really want someone specific at 5, I guess maybe if they want Coby White or someone like that, this would help them. But if they're like, we want Jarrett Culver, we want DeAndre Hunter, this seems like it could kind of be put them in a spot where they might lose out on someone because of this trade. But I think the signal here is like, Atlanta's trying to do something, and I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I really think, as far as what's going to happen there with Jarrett Culver, I think overall the Suns, Brent and I are both on the same page here, that we really are rooting for Culver to be there at 6. But today's trade with the Hawks, it seems like they're kind of prioritizing a guy like Jarrett Culver, because the more I've been thinking about it, he's a perfect next to Trae Young. It makes all the sense in the world from your standpoint, too, but with Cleveland, why not get 8 and 17, for example, and trade back? Because the Cavaliers, I think, are an asset needy team. They need to restock their cupboard because of all the years with LeBron and short-sighting those moves and trying for win now. Obviously, when you have LeBron James, you want to go win a title, but your draft picks, your future capital really took a big hit for that. I think Coby Altman's doing the right thing here, trying to really explore that option. I think it makes the most sense for them. What do you think, Brennan?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right, with the Hawks being kind of the question mark here. And it's smart of them to, I don't know, I kind of, one of the initial thoughts I have is just do it now and kind of throw things off. Like now they kind of have all the leverage for anybody. You know, if anyone wants Jarrett Culver, it's like, well, I'll go talk to the Hawks basically, because, you know, they could easily outbid basically anyone. You know, they might actually just do that deal to get up to five right now and then operate from there. I think that if there's a team trying to trade back, that's also kind of like, okay, well, call the Hawks up. So, you know, the Cavs are in that spot too, to a degree, having the 26th pick, but Atlanta just kind of, in the way we were talking about this draft of just the chaos today, they, to me, kind of just stepped to the front of the line and said, okay, well, we're at least going to try to shepherd this chaos along if no one else will.
Yeah. And I think if you're looking just at what these teams are sort of doing, it seems like at least we know of the top 10. If you want to run, let's run through the top 10 real quick. So obviously, like, David Griffin's just like, I'm taking Zion Williamson. Like, let's not even think about this. Memphis has signaled that they're taking Ja. You go to three, it's the Knicks. Like, I have no idea. They could take a bowl, and I'd be like, sure, it's the Knicks. Four, you get to LA. Like, who really knows? It seems like I'm at least expecting that pick to be traded. Like, I just can't imagine with LeBron at his age and his minute total, like, Darius Garland is like a happy outcome for them. You get to five. The Cavs could do a lot of it. They could trade. It seems like to me like they're going to try and get assets, and at least do this very pragmatically. You guys can speak to the Suns. We'll get to them. The Bulls, I mean, it's the Bulls. Like, they seem like they need a point guard. That just seems so obvious to me. Atlanta, and then Atlanta at eight is like the wild card of this, and the Wizards are in a weird spot, and then you got Atlanta again around up the top 10. I think you sort of have now, once you get past two, the Knicks are going to set a tone, the Lakers are going to set a tone, and then whatever happens at five, I think, is really going to inform what we see the rest of that top 10. Because if the Cavs, let's say like Atlanta gets up to five for whatever it costs, takes Culver, and it's Zion, Ja, RJ, and Garland, as a lot of people are projecting, what kind of position do you think that puts Phoenix and these other teams in the back half of the top 10?
Oh, man. From the Suns' perspective, that's really the worst-case scenario, because I don't really think – they can't reach for Brandon Clark there. It seems like he's not going to work out for Phoenix. I think he's one of the best fits on the board, but he's definitely not going to be a guy that's taking sixth overall. But outside of him, maybe DeAndre Hunter, but you're getting to guys like Cam Reddish as well, who I think – the types of players the Suns have really missed on in the past couple of years kind of qualify where you really should be trying to explore trading down here, because from the Suns' perspective, you just had a 19-win season. I can really sell the fan base on a guy like a DeAndre Hunter or a Cam Reddish and say, hey, let's wait two or three more years, even though we've been waiting for the playoffs for 9 or 10 years already.
Yeah, let me ask you guys. I mean, I know we don't know because it's just happening, but it feels like it has to be Culver, right? That the Hawks are coveting. It doesn't really seem like there's any other guy.
You would assume, right? Like, I think the obvious two would be Hunter or Culver, but yeah. because it's both those guys are guys that could be gone before eight. Whereas you look at and just look at the Hawks roster, they have Trae Young. They don't need Kobe White. They don't need Darius Garland or whomever. You know, Reddish would seem like a guy that very could well be there today, and his stock just seems pretty low. If you just look at the two guys, it would be Culver or Hunter, but I would guess it's Culver just because of the upside there and what it seems like how he might fit with Trey and what sort of like what Travis Link seems like he's building, unless they think Hunter is like a really good complement to Kevin Herter and they go that way. Like, I think either of those guys would make sense.
Yeah, I kind of feel like what we were talking about with what we know now about which teams kind of are leaning which direction, seems like Culver would be the guy you'd be most worried about being gone, because I don't think he falls further than six. You know, if the Sun, I think the Suns would take him, and they worked him out this week and all that. So that to me seems like the most likely option, where they're kind of reading the tea leaves. They see this guy who maybe he's, you know, second on their board, and they're like, wow, he could fall to five. At five, there's a team there that is pretty interested in moving down. Like, all the cards kind of fell the right direction for them. So it's just, it's fascinating. I'm impressed that they kind of did it this early, but Culver does seem to me like the guy that might be undervalued and might be the most reasonable. Cause I think if they're really all about Hunter, like, they could probably just sit there and wait at pick eight and just kind of see if he falls. I think there's a decent chance of that. Whereas Culver, really not so much.
So if you guys are the Cavs, I want to get your take on this. If you're the Cavs and you look at the roster and you look at what they have, and I think more importantly, what they don't have, what they really need, in the, based on what you know of these draft guys, based on what you know of sort of what you think Culver Hunter could be, do you think it's like worth it to actually move back?
I kind of think so in this draft because I feel like it kind of falls off flat after like three or four. Culver and Bear are kind of where it starts to fall for me a little bit, where Garland and all these other guys like Hunter, Reddish, they're all in that same range for me where I think you can move back to eight, maybe still get a Cam Reddish at eight overall and still be fine with it, and then maybe get a guy like Grant Williams at 17. I feel like that makes a lot of sense, and like we mentioned before, I think you have to keep restocking the assets of this team, and outside Colin Sexton and Chetty Osman, I don't really know if there's any other young talent on this team, so you got to really reload and just prepare for a long rebuild, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing Evan and I have been talking about, kind of contemplating the possibility that the Suns, James Jones said at one point, you know, they'll at least look into the possibility of trading back up into the first round with the 32nd pick. And to me, that it's not the strength of the draft because it's still the lower down you get. Those guys are getting picked 20th for a reason. If they were great, they would get picked first. But there are a lot of high floor guys from, you know, 15 to 30 that might appeal to even a rebuilding team, knowing like, okay, yes, he's a young guy. Maybe he's not going to be our lottery hit where we, you know, come away with a superstar late in the draft, but it's still a player that we know we can have around here for a long time and who fills a role or, you know, has a type of a personality we like, whatever. You fall in love with someone and you really can get a guy like that that you feel great about in the 20s, which I don't actually think is always true. There's drafts that have been much stronger at the top than this draft that didn't have that. So taking advantage of that range in this class to me seems like a smart bet for anybody, but especially a team like the Cavs who kind of, I think, should be approaching this from a volume standpoint rather than, you know, quality or quantity over quality maybe in this draft, just because the quality is not really there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm going to respond to that with a take on Culver when we get back, but we're going to take a quick break here and just letting you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Hotels.com. Hotels.com is great. So use Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own with Hotels.com and get rewarded basically everywhere. That's Hotels.com. Be there, do that, and get rewarded. Today's show is also brought to you by Grip 6. This is an ultra lightweight belt with no holes, no flap, and it's a great Father's Day gift. So go to Grip 6. Use their special offer at grip6.com/lock. That's LOCK, grip6.com/lock for your deal. We'll be right back. And we're back. Locked on Cavs, locked on Suns. Chris Manning, Brendan Clean, Evan Sedary. Okay, so here's I have my two-part thing on this is, number one, I really like the idea of Jared Culver. I think he might make a lot of sense in John Beilein's system. It's a system that is not going to ask one guy to do all of the creating. It's based on movement and flow and empowerment of different players to provide in different ways. Of the wings that are reasonably going to be available at five and below, Culver to me just screams like a John Beilein player more than anybody else. That being said, if you were to trade down and you were to get some combination of, let's just say you get 8 and 10, and I don't know if that's an overpay for Atlanta. That's if the Cavs, that's where I would be asking for. Let's say you get 8 and 10. If you can come out of the draft with, let's say Reddish is there at 8, you roll the dice on Reddish at 8, you take someone of the Sekou Nwaboya, Brendan Clark, someone of that range at 10, right? And then you go to your 26th pick, you know, you get Keldon Johnson, you get Grant Williams, you get Talen Horton-Tucker, Matthias Thybulle, if he ends up falling that far, Ty Jerome. You can come out with three guys like that. I think that's a really good draft. Now, do I think that Culver is going to be the best guy of that? I do. Do I believe that he's like overwhelmingly going to be a star player? I don't know if he projects that way, but I think there's something about him and Beilein's system that really is interesting to me. I don't think it's enough, though, for me to say trading back and getting 8 and 10 isn't worth it.
I don't think so. I mean, and I think if you're a rebuilding team, if you're like an early rebuilding team, you know, Washington or Cleveland or, you know, I guess even Atlanta, the presence of Reddish to me is just kind of like a corkscrew in all of this. And so that's one. If you can get Reddish and other guys where your whole draft isn't riding on Cam Reddish panning out, but you're the team that gets to try it and you're the team that, you know, in this case you laid out, like also has some other guys to develop at the same time, where you could still look back and be like, yeah, Reddish kind of flopped. He's over in Turkey now. But like we have Ty Jerome and we have Jackson Hayes, and those guys are just signing their second deals and we're really happy with it. Like that type of gamble to me, and kind of playing it safe and risky at the same time, just like I said, by going volume over betting on one dude, that seems to me like the best strategy in this draft. And I think Reddish makes it a little easier, because I don't think it's that crazy to think he could be better than Culver. It's just there's probably far less outcomes out of 1,000 where he's the guy that breaks right compared to Culver. But if you're betting on those, you know, 20 out of 1,000, then go for it.
Yeah, I really think as far as Reddish at 8, that's the one I really like the most if they were to trade back, because like you mentioned there, you're not betting on Cam Reddish if you do move back, get extra assets. And if we're not, I don't know if Kevin Love's still in their long-term plans or not, Chris, but as far as a front court pairing us to Kevin Love, I love the idea of Brandon Clark for rim protection and a guy who can maybe be more than that long-term. I really like the fit of those two guys. And if you walk out of there with Culver, then a Brandon Clark, then let's say like a Ty Jerome at 26, that's a hell of a draft in my opinion.
Yeah, I think 26 is a sneaky, interesting pick for them, just because I want to see what they do with it, or if they try to move up again. Like I do, I mean, the Cavs are also a team with this J.R. Smith contract. They can eat bad money from some other team, potentially get up again. Like there's in our network mock draft, I don't want to spoil it because I want people to listen to it, but I did a trade that I was like very happy with, and I don't think was totally unrealistic to get back up into the teens and get a player that I think would make a lot of sense for the Cavs. Someone I'll just say I've mentioned on the show a little bit already. A little tease there for you. But yeah. I think like Clark and Reddish would make sense. I think there's like a lot of guys, you know, in that range that could make sense. If the Cavs are a team and it seems like that there's guys like Nikhil Alexander Walker or someone like that that is there higher on their board that is maybe lower on the conventional board, you could reach for them at 10, and because I don't think you get too much blowback. You also could, like, really, if you wanted to, you could, like, roll the dice on Bol Bol. If that's, like, what you wanted to do, I don't know if I would advise that, but you could do something like that. And Clark would be, you know, a guy that I think could play the five next to Love and also could, you know, be a piece moving forward if Love moves on, or when Love eventually, you know, his contract runs out in, like, 4 years or whatever, what ends up happening. I think it just gives you more flexibility, and the Cavs need that. I don't know how – and I think of all the teams in the lottery – it's like, to me, them and the Wizards are the teams that need the most flexibility to kind of build something kind of moving forward. Like, I think there's a clear need in Phoenix. There's a clear need in Chicago. Atlanta has two 10-pole guys, probably three already if you include Herter. When you get past four, I think the Cavs are sort of the, along with Washington, who doesn't really have the ability to do any sort of wheeling and dealing here, the team that can, I think, be the most patient in terms of trying to hunt something else down.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that as an option. And really, it just throws this whole scenario that we're talking about, just throws from the Suns' perspective just into a conundrum, because I think just today's trades, and when we talk more about what Cleveland could be doing if they're actually the team that is savvy enough to move back and collect more assets, that's going to hurt the Suns even more on draft night, in my opinion.
Yeah, we really don't like Coby White on our show. and I think I don't really know of anyone who, like, follows the draft closely who does. So
Trevor Magnotti is a fan, and I trust Trevor with my life.
I guess Jonathan Sharks is as well. He's been somebody who's been pretty outspoken, and I would say the same that you just said about Trevor about Jonathan. So maybe I should not have said no one, but very few people seem to like him, and I just don't. And I guess the way I should frame it is, like, I think we're less bullish on him. That was a good pun. Less bullish on him next to Booker than elsewhere, you know. Like, if he was to go to Chicago, I don't actually think that's quite as terrible. I mean, his fit with Zach LaVine is probably worse than his fit with Booker, but the way their roster is kind of constructed, I think there's less of a hierarchy already, less of a pecking order, less of a structure. I think the Suns just need somebody to kind of bridge the gaps sooner rather than later. And if you're betting on White to be more of a well-rounded dude in like three seasons, the Suns really don't have the time for that. So that's kind of where we're sitting, and why the Culver thing is I think what the Suns will be crossing their fingers for, and what we are as well, just as kind of wanting this team to pan out the right way after years of picking so far back and, you know, falling in the lottery several times and generally sucking. Like, for this lottery to not only drop them down to six, but then the draft to pan out in a way that takes the a couple guys off their board that would fit, because I think Darius Garland is another one, and I really don't expect him to be there at six. Like it would just be kind of more of a kick in the butt after lottery night when they dropped three spots.
So what do you guys think of drafting and having to build out of the back end of the lottery? And this draft is a kickstart of this. And obviously I think Phoenix is in a good spot with some of the guys they have, but just in terms of what you think they need, like, you've alluded to this a little bit, Brendan, but does it seem to you like it's a workable position if you don't have the necessarily the flexibility to kind of move around? And if I actually want to ask you guys kind of you this, but with how you value the back end of the lottery, would you rather flip that pick for a point guard of some kind, or would you rather just kind of hold true and take the best guy available, even if it's not a perfect fit?
Well, I would say, to address the beginning of your question, it's one of the weirdest things about the Suns team is that the guys, aside from DeAndre Ayton, they've hit on three guys in a big way at 10, 13, and 14 with TJ Warren, Devin Booker, and Mikal Bridges. Like, those are three of their best picks of this whole stretch of rebuilding, which is about to be 10 seasons long. And they were outside of the top 10. Like, that's completely backwards from what the statistics say you should be able to get at those spots. And somehow they've done well, and they've done worse in the top five. So that is just, the Suns are definitely the exception, not the rule in that circumstance, but it has worked out for them. They've gotten very lucky, but I think generally, like, I think it's something that they should have done more often. I mean, they infamously, and it's been one of the biggest themes of Evan and I since we took over the show, is just the unraveling careers of both Marquese Chriss and Dragan Bender.
That's Cavs legend, Marquese Chriss.
Cavs legend, thank you very much. Suns legend. I mean, he's just legend. I don't even think we need to tie him to any one city. He's just a general legend.
The worst screen sitter I've ever seen play an NBA game. It's unbelievable.
I don't think I don't know if he knows the rules of basketball, and I'm not, that's like a very educated statement. I'm not even trying to make an offensive joke about him. I actually believe that, but I think it's something they should have done more. I mean, how do you feel, Evan? Like, I feel like they were so attached to some of these guys that they picked at the top where, you know, Josh Jackson, they sold themselves on him so much. Or, you know, Alex Len, that draft where it's like, you just could have not picked somebody at five, like maybe move around that year. It's like the worst draft in history. Just try to do something. You know, it feels like they weren't very eager to kind of flip around as much as they could have been.
No, that's for sure. I agree with both of you guys. I think from the standpoint of being flexible and really just doing the BPA rep, best player available, and sticking to that, it just seems like, looking back on now, two drafts later, just how the Suns and Ryan McDonough were working the phone lines with his agent and having Danny Ainge fly out to Sacramento and then have him like, oh, no thanks, I'm not going to work out for you guys anymore. I want to be with the Suns instead. Then doing all that work and Jackson doesn't pan out. And you have, like you said, Marquese Chriss, Dragan Bender. It seemed like they really just honed in on some guys that they didn't really pay too much attention to as far as the finer details of scouting. And I think really if you dive in more on the profiles of those guys and you dive in more on their potential, it just seems like they were just really bad at evaluating the top of the draft. And like Brendan mentioned, just super weird how this franchise is good at drafting the back end of the lottery, but is absolutely horrible the top outside of maybe DeAndre Ayton.
So kind of last part of our my side of this podcast, listeners, we're going to have part two over on the Locked On Suns feed. So you want to basically finish up this podcast, go check out the Locked On Suns feed and then subscribe to that while you're there as well. But when you look at this draft, are there guys in this back end of the lottery that scare you? Is there anyone that if the Suns took them at six that you'd be a little concerned? For me, there are guys like that with the Cavs. I'll just say, like, the Reddish worries me. I get Garland. I don't love the fit. You know, I was very out of, not because of what I think of him. I just think the Cavs taking Ja wouldn't have made much sense. But is there someone, and I know you don't really like Coby White, but is there someone at six that would kind of be like, okay, I'm not really quite sure what the plan is here for what Phoenix is building with Monty Williams and Devin Booker and everything?
I think for me, I'll start here. Just Coby White, like you mentioned, that's Brendan and I have been on that a lot. I just think Coby White's a guy who's going to be taking at least 2 to 3 years of development, and the Suns don't have time for a guy like that. Another one who I think is probably the most realistic option, though, if this is how the board's going to fall and if Cleveland does indeed trade back or even select Jarrett Culver, I think DeAndre Hunter, the more I've been thinking about, is the most realistic option for him, but I don't really know. what his ceiling is. It just seems like he's just a role player on the next level. He's not Kawhi like he was at San Diego State. You know, a lot of people would say just similar measurables, similar all that, but they're nowhere close as far as athletes go. It just worries me with this draft outside of that 4 or 5 range, because Cam Reddish is just a huge red flag for me, just so inconsistent. We've already been burned by the Josh Jackson comparisons. When I watch Cam Reddish, it seems like he's very similar to Josh Jackson, just to the way he feels the game. But also DeAndre Hunter, like I said, I don't really know his ceiling. Say Kudon Boy, just a roll of the dice, in my opinion. There's just a lot of options after 4 or 5 in this draft that really worry me. How about you, Brennan?
Yeah, I would actually, I mean, I agree with you on kind of everything you said, but I would just throw one more out there, and it's Garland. Like, I mean, Cavs fans will know how silly it would be to compare the guy to Kyrie Irving. I just think, like, we do this with some other players where we just have agreed, like, it's unfair to do this comparison. I mean, everyone, you know, some random website somewhere will always do it, but, you know, we're not going to pretend like every versatile big man is Draymond Green. We're not going to say every point guard who can shoot really well is Steph. Like, I think we should start doing that with Kyrie. Like, no one will ever have the acrobatic, strong, balanced finishing ability that Kyrie has. Like, let's just stop comparing guys to him, because no one will have that. So I think the Garland's benefiting from guys in the NBA that have succeeded that kind of look and play like him. And I don't see him having the outlier skills in a lot of the areas that, you know, Dame or Steph or Kyrie have. And so it just worries me. Like, it feels like his floor is just lower than low. So I would take him if I'm the Suns, because I think at 6, he's just too good of a value. But he would worry me.
Yeah, he's a guy that I think probably benefited some, I think, from, you know, honestly, there's not a ton of tape on him. There's just, he's got that reputation that I think benefits him. And look, like, I just think, to kind of wrap up this half of the show here, I think there's just like a very non-zero chance that this is all just a crazy night, and we just like don't, and like what we're projecting now just like isn't going to occur in the way we're thinking it might. Like, the only thing that I feel sure about is that, like, the draft for me really starts at 3, and, you know, so that could change. That's obviously, I think there's the potential for a lot of that to change in the next couple of weeks, but I really do think, like, we're not that far off from just having like a draft that we just like don't quite know what to make of. And that's really fun. It's also just makes it really hard to sort of evaluate like what kind of position these teams are in. Like, I don't envy James Jones, you know, I don't envy whoever is making the pick for the Wizards. Like, I think those are really hard positions to be in. And it's teams like Atlanta that have kind of given themselves out to kind of really make this a different looking draft that I think kind of are going to shape that night more than anything else.
It's going to be a really wild draft, because the more I've been thinking about, the more, especially we tie in Anthony Davis Derby into all of this, just with how the Knicks are involved. You also have the Clippers and the Lakers. 3 of those teams are in the top 5. I could easily see, if the Hawks do trade up in this draft, let's say with Cleveland, there could be 2 trades in the top 5 within the first few minutes of the draft, and that could easily be one of the wildest drafts we've ever covered, in my opinion.
Yeah, like, what if the Knicks trade down? You know, like, we haven't even talked about that. Like, but what if the Knicks are like, what if like the Hawks go up to 3 or something? Like, things could just get really weird. And I think that's going to be really interesting. But I think that's going to be it for this part of the Locked On Cavs, the Locked On Suns crossover. Brendan, Evan, thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
Thanks, Chris.
Again, go follow them. Brendan Clean 14. Evan, what's your Twitter handle?
It is at eSidery. So it's eSidery.
Yeah, so go follow both of them. Follow Locked On Suns, follow Locked On Cavs. If you aren't already, check out the new Himalaya podcast app. That's a free podcast app, super easy to use, has every single podcast you're searching for, personally curated playlists that are made just for you by expert podcast tastemakers. You can follow listeners based on their favorite shows and creators. You can like and comment. You can put thumbs up on individual episodes. Great shareable playlist. Go check out the new Himalaya app on the App Store or the Google Play Store. Follow Locked On Cavs and Locked On Suns while you're there. Again, finish this show, subscribe to the show, go follow Locked On Suns next, and we're going to be continue the conversation over there. But I'm Chris Manning at Twitter at CWMWrights. Talk to you soon.